football on off the ball.
I use the words like daylight robbery. I honestly can't.
For who? Who's been robbed?
Everybody. Everybody is being robbed.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
Performance so far of the World Cup, maybe not.
The bad.
I'm scratching my head. The performances was just flat that intensity.
And the amber. Off the ball's performance rankings.
Man United special, is it, Enda?
No, I'll be kind. I'll be kind to the Westmeath supporters. So we're going to start with Westmeath. They're top of our performance rankings for this week. Obviously, they've won their second Leinster title. 35-year-old Mark McHugh, Donegal man.
It was Paddy O'Shea's 71st birthday on Friday, actually. It would have been his 71st birthday. So it was a weekend for nostalgia. And it's a real pity he's not around to watch it.
It is. I rewatched the Marooned documentary ahead of our chat with Alan Mangan and John Kane last week. And Paddy would have been proud of Mark O'Shea's or Mark McHugh's performance at the weekend and the amount of steps that he did across the course of the game. Because yeah. One thing that was very, very evident with the Maroon documentary, watching back, Paddy, he was running and legging it the entire time up the sideline throughout those games. He was playing, he was kicking every ball, and Mark McHugh is very similar in this. He's definitely not a stay calm on a touchline type manager.
No.
But what a performance from Westmeath. I mean,
was the phrase half cracked, he's half mad? Was that what the from
yeah
the captain's speech?
He,
Ronan Wallace was saying, Mark McHugh, he's half mad, but sure, you have to be.
And you do have to be. And
yeah,
you kind of do have to think that at 35 years old, you can just hop into this dressing room and be the main man and actually be the main man and lead them to a Leinster title. Obviously, he mentioned a couple of weeks ago, as a quote that did the rounds, was that nobody died from exhaustion on a pitch, and the Westmeath boys definitely aren't going to this year.
No.
Like in extra time, they had more legs, more power. They didn't look tired at all. The Dublin boys were cramping all around them, and you had Sen and Baker just running through them.
Outrageous. The Baker, outrageous. Yeah. Baker boys, outrageous stuff from them. They were like at both ends of the pitch. Oh my God. Will we get into it?
Sure. We have some Mark McHugh reaction. He was chatting to Jonathan Higgins after the game, and I actually love how he starts off this, because Jonathan Higgins asks him, can he believe it? And here's what Mark McHugh said.
Can I believe it? Yes, because I know what's in that room, Jonathan. Did I think it was going to happen maybe as soon, you know, this year with our first year? Probably not. And, you know, I don't think anybody can take it away from us. We went the hard route here. You know, we beat Longford, Meath, Kildare, and now Dublin. Like, you know, there's not many more Leinsters as hard won as that. I'm not saying I'm speechless, like, but to see the faces on the players, to see the faces on, you know, the rest of the management team that's from, obviously, Westmeath, and to see the supporters after the game, you know, that'll live long in my memory. And the chills it's given us today is just unbelievable. And very, very proud to be part of that squad. And I know I speak to you about pride all the time, but when them lads put a shift in like they're after doing and leaving everything on Croke Park's field, I can't say any more for them lads. You know what they've done for their county. They're legends.
I couldn't help but think back to what you told me after the Kildare game. Nobody's died from exhaustion on a football pitch. There's always a bit more, your side found a bit more, particularly in extra time where it could have been easy to drop the heads. You blitzed Dublin Park 1-4 without reply.
Yeah, I live by that. I said that this morning, like, nobody's going to die off tiredness on this field. You may cramp, and you've done a job for us, we'll pull you off, but you're not going to die. I felt our squad won us the game today, you know. I do feel our squad, it wasn't our team, it was our 22 23 players that have come off, you know, that came on, came back off, and just couldn't give any more. We at the very end there, we had to send boys inside to stay inside because they couldn't cramp. And listen, Dublin lads were too, but you know, their squad has been stretched the last few weeks over injury. And you know, I read somewhere during the week, you know, in the last 20 years, you know, they've had 31 finals, they've lost 29, or they've won 29 of them, drawn two that they eventually went on to win. So to beat them, you need to be on top of your game. And we said to beat them, we need to show something different, and we show something different the other day.
He's 35. This is outrageous.
Yeah.
It's an outrageous achievement.
Yeah.
And the manner in which they did it, where it looked like they should have had the game won. They made some bad decisions coming down the stretch. Dublin did what Dublin do, or have done. And it turned out it's not the same Dublin by any stretch of the imagination. But we've seen the movie before where at the end of a game, the favourites pare back a lead, go in front, and then are able to kill the game. But they weren't. West Meath went down, kicked a point, drew the game, made a draw level, and then there was still like 60 seconds left to go. And it was actually still West Meath who were coming on strong. But that first half of extra time is outrageous stuff from West Meath.
It's like,
we're going to smash you in the mouth again and again and again. And look, the goal, that is one of those that we haven't seen those types of mistakes from Dublin really since the Tommy Lyons era or before that. Like,
it was so surprising that it even took Darren Maloney missed it. He didn't know it went into the goal. I can't remember. I think it was Kieran Whelan was on co-coms. Or no, it was
Enda McGiddley, was it?
No, it was Eamon Fitzmaurice.
Oh, Fitzy, yeah.
He was on comms and he was like,
Jerry,
oh, it's gone in.
It was
Jerry Canning.
Yeah. Jerry Canning, yeah. He was like, oh, it's gone in. It's gone in the goal.
Yeah.
No, that's a goal. That's a goal. And it took still another 10 seconds to catch up.
It was a very weird kind of reaction from Comerford, wasn't it? It was like some people were suggesting that he thought it went over for a two-pointer, but I kind of thought he knew it was dropping on top of him, but just misjudged it completely. Like you were saying there, Jer, they lose the lead coming into the last 60 seconds, and that would have been so characteristic of Westmeath over the last couple of seasons to go and lose that game then. Anyone that's watched any Westmeath football over the last two or three seasons knows that they've been very, very good up until the 65th minute, and then they start to collapse, and it started to happen again. But I think that's the difference with Mark McHugh this season in comparison to Dermot McCabe over the last two seasons, is that he's put belief into the players that, you know, yous are good, you're a good team, good group together, just actually believe in yourselves. And it's clear this season they're closing games out, and that's been their biggest issue. It's a really talented team.
And final game of the league against Wexford, they lose in the 69th minute, and then Luke Loughlin comes out of the team, who's their talisman and leader, and it's like, that's okay, we can collectively step up. So I don't know, outrageous stuff and a joyous outpouring.
Yeah,
now I would have loved an old pitch invasion there.
Yeah,
yeah,
I wouldn't
absolutely
mind that
fine.
Now, yeah.
Absolutely fine in this scenario.
Yeah,
when you know it's not, it didn't have a ferocity to it, I guess.
No,
is the difference here. It's more of a joyous thing. On Mark McHugh and his age, his father Martin, he was 36 years old when he took over a cab.
Was he? Yeah?
And went on to win the Ulster title. So
yeah,
like father, like son. There, the McHugh household in general are just ridiculous. They're football men through and through. We saw the return of John Heslin in this final. Worth a mention.
Just love it.
What a phenomenal footballer he is, by the way.
Has lost.
2-pointer in the extra time. I think his fielding was more important in this game than his points, but...
Well, it's just the first thing he does is catch a kick out from the Dubs. Yeah. Like, uh-oh. From the Dubs' perspective, uh-oh. And just picking up all the right positions. They didn't put him on the free straight away. They did it at the start of extra time, and he chips one over from right in front of the goal. And you're like, okay, yeah. What's going to happen now?
Bit of rustiness there still, though.
We mentioned
Westmeath's slight collapse at the end. It actually started with John Heslin failing to put the ball over the bar. He was trying to set up the goal, but we actually have some audio from the man himself as well. He was chatting to Jonathan Higgins after the game as well, and he was speaking about what it meant to finally get over the line with Westmeath after all this time.
I think dreamland for me, it's unbelievable. I'm delighted for all the people of Westmead, you know. Mark McHugh rang me and Jamie Ganood, he deserves a bit of credit for it as well. And, you know, when they had the injuries and things like that, just said, would you come back in and do a bit with the lads? And that's all it was at the start. And sure, just the way things went, I found myself in the 26th this week. And, you know, the support and the texts from people all over Westmeath, and even outside of Westmeath, people were texting saying fair play and best of luck. And I suppose I just wanted to come in today to encourage the lads on, and they were brilliant. They've been brilliant the last few games, and I'm just over the moon for them. And I'm the luckiest person to have been involved in it, to be honest. Yeah,
it's funny, like, if you take a step back, you soldiered for so long, had drawn a line, and now you've come back and you're Leinster champions. Can you put that together?
Yeah, look, I'll be honest, I didn't think it would happen. Obviously, I retired, but, you know, I sent a few of the lads retiring. It's funny because I was still playing with the club. and I thank my club for the training that they would have been giving me, because I was obviously trained to a pretty decent standard to be able to come back in and mix it with the lads. But yeah, honestly, a month ago, I never thought that this was way off the radar for me, you know. So I'm just, but I suppose it would be remiss of me not to say about the lads that for the last couple of games, when the phone call came from Mark, he said to me, do you have any questions? And I had no questions, because I had full faith in the lads. After what I saw in the games against Meath and Kildare and Longford and in the league, I just thought they had an immense energy, immense belief about themselves. And if I could just come in and give a little bit of a boost, that was all. And sure, look, the rest is history. We're Leinster champions, which I never thought I'd be saying. Obviously, as you're retired, you know, I had the belief once upon a time. I had the belief a few weeks ago when he rang me, and I'm just thrilled.
Ah, couldn't happen to a nicer fella. The Athlone Bone is with us. Adrian Barry, good morning to you.
Rory morning, Grugan. Lads.
You're an Ulster champion,
isn't it? No, not Rory Grugan. Adrian Barry.
Rory Grugan. Get out of town. Clear the stage, buddy.
Oh, you're a bit croaky there, buddy. Where did you go?
Went down to Mulligan's for a while. Listen, unbelievable, lads. This has come out of, obviously, I think probably for most external observers, nowhere. And then I think for everybody who's been paying close attention over the last while, it's been coming slowly and with an awful lot of very tight, frustrating, excruciating results. But unbelievable.
When did you start to believe?
I started to believe with a minute and a half to go in extra time. I was chatting with my mates afterwards last night, and we were all saying, what point did you start going? Like, even though, again, to external observers, right, I'm sure everybody was going, oh, this is done now, right? There was a point, the goal goes in, Ger, like you were talking about. I was at the opposite end of the pitch, and I saw the ball going in. And it looked like a two-pointer, and I was up, and I was giving it the big one, and next thing it flashes across the screen, cool. And I'm like, oh, there must be a technical error with the screen or something. But no, I have been saying, in terms of like the overall picture of things, I was on a conversation with, on a call with our colleague, the esteemed Tommy Rooney, on Friday morning, and we were chatting away about events upcoming, and I said to him, I think Westmeath are going to do it. And I'd been saying that sort of quietly, not to sort of... Trumpian predictions that you really want to hear in advance of a game like that, but I was confident. I have to say, going in 7-1 on Ger was insane for Dublin.
It was, it turns out.
Yeah, absolutely insane. And like, you know, there's a lot of comparisons, I think, with 2004. Somebody sent me out a picture recently from 22 years ago when I was out on the pitch with a Westmead flag in my hand. You were saying, geez, they could have made one exception and let us rush the pitch yesterday. If ever there was a case for it, it was definitely that. But a lot of comparisons, like, just so much to like about this Westmead team. How many pieces have we done with that Westmead 2004 team over the years, talking about the heartbreak of the Derry game in the next round, and, you know, maybe they'd over-celebrate it a bit. And listen, there'll be plenty of celebrations. You could see it in Mullingar last night, and really whatever happens from here, Cavan, as Dara well knows, will be hot favourites going into that game, and we'll just have to
6 weeks
keep the ball kicked out to them.
Plenty of prep for that one. You've been telling us around the office, though, that there's something in this Westmead group. Even last season, when they had so many disappointing results, as you said, there's something about them, though. And there was always something about Martin McHugh coming in.
I think that was the most frustrating thing, Garrett, that everybody felt that there was. And then it was just, you mentioned the Wexford game earlier. How many Wexford games were there over the last few years? Like, it was just that point after point after point. And you kind of felt that at a certain point it had become ingrained almost in that Westmead team. It was part of the personality to not be able to get over the line. And has been mentioning every half minute he's getting a mention from Mark McHugh in there, and he's 100% right. He is the new Paddy O'Shea. It's what he's done there at his age is incredible. There was a piece with Eamon McGee that stood out for me that I think, was it you guys do it, or was it Owen last week or the week before? And he was talking about the unlikeliness of Mark McHugh as a coach, but and Ger mentioned the Ronan Wallace speech, and there's a bit of madness in him. And that's exactly what they need. Like, and you know, no loaf of bread to be thrown over the line today, Alan. Like, you know, the grain of rice. It struck me in extra time that it wasn't a grain of rice in the end. It was a right old bag of rice that tipped the scales.
A paddy field. It was insane. They smashed them. Like, they properly smashed them. And I thought it was a fair reflection of the performance of the two teams.
Yeah. No, I agree with that totally. And obviously the texts are flying sort of through the first half, and you know, there was no, like, I felt at the end of normal time, I thought, Jesus, you know, we can't have good things, right? That was sort of how it was starting to feel. But I did feel like that, you know, we go up and we get that equalising point, and we're the ones who get the ball. And we're the ones who got the ball really all game, particularly in the second half. Jeez, we really turned the screw in their midfield. Like, whether it was a breaking ball, it was catching ball, but fighting like dogs. And probably from a Dublin point of view, it was starting to feel, and you could hear it around us, certainly with the fans as well, it was starting to feel like they couldn't get a break. But we were so dominant, really, in midfield. And a lot of that, too, was obviously Patrick Cuffield-Byrne goes down on his shoulder very early in the game and he goes off. You know, in hindsight, that was a huge few grains of sand, grains of rice on the scales. But there were so many moments throughout the game. There was, like, I was actually only watching it back. As you can imagine, my timeline is fairly full of all Westmeath goodness at the minute. I've seen all the great scores about 100 times already. But there was one moment that definitely stood out for me. We were about 4 points down. 25 minutes in, Shane Allan gets the ball and he's well outside the 40 and he steps up and takes on the responsibility, takes on the leadership, and he knocks it over. And it was only actually watching back that clip there about 10 minutes ago that I saw that the referee had his hand up for an advantage. So it was sort of a kick to nothing. But there are people like Shane Allan in the squad and in the team now who would have been in the squad previously. He'd be a relation. He's probably a grandnephew of Foster and Allan, there are so many absolutely brilliant stories across the entire team of not all related to Foster and Allan, but you know, for the day that's in it, we give everybody their dues. But so many brilliant stories, like Ray Kennellan keeping at it, a man with a huge amount of miles in the legs, like the John Heslin stuff writes itself. The reaction when he comes in off the bench yesterday was unbelievable, and like, he was no make weight.
No. Straight into action, winning ball, telling people where to go and look. But the Baker boys, they were both sensational.
Yeah. I don't think I'll be doing them a disservice because hopefully we will have them on at some point over the next few weeks. But like, Ollie Baker is basically a Colliery man and a Clone man at this stage. He's been there probably the vast majority of his life. And I know Desi on the Sunday game last night gave a tip of the cap to his wife as well. But I got on to Ollie last night just to say, listen, at some point over the next while, will you come and chat to us? I've chatted to Ollie a few times on pitches after Westmeath have been beaten, and we'd both be pouring over the heartbreak of whatever had happened on the pitch. There's been so many games. The Armagh game from a couple of years ago when we were within a John Heslin free getting into an All-Ireland final really sticks out for me, but it isn't alone, and it's not just in the last 12 months. We've been that close for a while, but he texts back anyway, and he said, for a long time, those lads were the sons of Ollie Baker, and I can proudly hand it over now to being the father of Senan and Tig, Leinster senior football champions. How cool is that?
That is class.
Yeah. Love that.
That is class.
And they were brilliant, Gerard. They were brilliant. Senan and Baker particularly. These rules have brought out so much. Luke Loughton lit the touch paper here, right? Everybody knows it. And like, there's a long tail on the touch paper that he lit with the performances that he's put in over the last couple of months. And obviously now he's sidelined. But somebody like Senan and Baker, who people have been talking about quietly over the last while, these rules have really come to suit a player like that. But the composure that man gets, he got the level and point, if I'm right. He works his way down the side of the pitch on the left-hand side, gets to an angle, takes it off what I think is his weaker left foot, really tight angle, pings it over the bar, and there were so many of those yesterday. And Tig, he definitely doesn't look, he looks a little bit more than his 22 years, but again, up and down the pitch, a couple of already legends, I think, in Westmeath shirts.
Yeah, they're both young. The internet doesn't know the exact age of the two lads, but you're saying 22 is Tig.
And Senan, I think, is maybe a year younger.
I think Senan's 21.
Right, okay.
Yeah.
So the future's pretty rosy here.
Yeah.
And, you know, the next thing is going to be, can they keep Mark McEwen? Hopefully Jim McGuinness stays on for another few years and that job doesn't become available.
I mean, there's every possibility that Jim McGuinness will stay on for a long, long time now, isn't there? Like, I mean, are they going to put right and the issues, the walls of last July or early August, whatever the hell it was, he'd want to hang around until that happens.
Yeah. But, well, wait and see. I don't know if Donegal have had enough time to prepare for this game, so
no,
never know.
Exactly. The grass is too short. Anyway, Adrian, we'll let you go and have a coffee.
Yup, Westmeath.
Thanks a million for joining us.
Nice one, lads.
Just before we move on to the next one, performance ranking on Sennan Baker. He obviously scored 4 points from the bench, but when he came on, he really did change the game. Westmeath went on to score 9 points to Dublin's 3 in the space of the 15 minutes straight after he came on. So
yeah,
he was the difference maker for turning the tide in Westmeath's favour. We'll move on to the other provincial final of the weekend. We had Armagh Monaghan. Armagh looking to right the wrongs of the past 3 years, their fourth Ulster final in a row, and they just about did it in the end. They went to extra time. They are Ulster champions for the first time in 18 years, Ger. And look, for an Ulster football fan of a certain age, be that my age, it seems absolutely unthinkable that Armagh went 18 years without winning an Ulster title, because they were the bane of everyone's lives in the 2000s.
Yeah.
But look, yeah, they were probably the better team throughout the game.
Definitely.
I actually had it marked that from the point that Armagh drew at level, which was around 14 minutes, Andrew Murnan scored a point. Armagh were leading that game the entirety of the game, except for 30 seconds after that when Monaghan scored, but then Armagh went up and scored, and then Armagh dominated the game until the end of the game when Monaghan drew at level. Armagh led that game throughout.
Like, Monaghan weren't at the races whatsoever throughout the whole game, but then Jack McCarron comes on and it's like a completely different game again. He just comes on, he just marshals the game. He's been absolutely key for them in this campaign so far, but yeah, Armagh far and away the better team on the day. I didn't see any other, even when it went to extra time, Monaghan pulled the game back. I didn't see them win in extra time. They looked tired. They didn't, and then after bringing Jack McCarron on, they didn't really have many players to kind of bring on, make an impact, and Armagh just had the firepower off the bench, like Ross McQuillan coming off the bench is pretty ridiculous. To bring a player of that quality off.
Oisín O'Neill came back off the bench as well.
Yeah.
He went out early doors in the game and he really made the difference in extra time. He gets the goal. And Armagh just kind of went on to dominate the second half. Again, it's probably just the case of Monaghan played their cards.
Yeah.
And they just didn't have enough firepower in the end to get over the line. But it can't be understated what this means to Armagh winning Ulster. It's a rarity that you win the All-Ireland title before you win your province. And to put to bed the Ulster title now, after going to extra time, losing on penalties, extra time, losing to Donegal, and now going to extra time again and finally being able to do it, like that'll be a huge boost for Armagh.
And the reward is a game against Derry.
Mm.
Yeah.
Not an easy one.
No, it's not at all. I think Derry will be looking forward to that now, going, oh, you're the champions, are you? Nice one. Monaghan, obviously, in the next round, have Mayo. I don't know what's going to happen in that game. I mean,
that'd be interesting.
Are Mayo done?
Andy Moore and Derby.
Or are Mayo long grassing this and everybody wrote us off? Because they've been written off. They've taken some pretty egregious poundings from people since they got beaten.
And they were very good up until the point, up until that Roscommon game. So maybe they've just corrected a few wrongs in that game and to come back better.
The draw suddenly, now that Westmeath have Cavan at home.
Yeah.
Armagh have Derry. Monaghan have Mayo. And the Dubs are playing Louth again, having battered them the first day and then coming off the back of that defeat. Now, will Ger Brennan be back for that game? The Ger Brennan derby?
I don't think so.
How many
so.
Weeks will that be at this stage?
I thought it was up until the Leinster final, but anyway, look, all of a sudden, those games which looked fairly straightforward in our heads, it was going to be a win for Dublin. The Westmeath Cavan was a bit of a coin toss. Armagh would have been strong enough favourites after the poundings they were handing out to teams. But Monaghan showed something in that game, and Derry were sickened to be beaten by Monaghan.
Mm.
You know, the other thing that just snuck into my head was Westmeath obviously have played extra time recently, and that might give them a slight advantage against the Dubs. But they played extra time against the Kildare team, who were the most inefficient almost that any team has been in the championship, and still they brought that Westmeath team to extra time. So maybe reports of our demise have been greatly exaggerated. Anyway,
I think the game that's been flipped on its head the most is probably the Louth Dublin game, because Louth were so resoundingly beaten by Dublin, and all of a sudden now it's like, well, actually Louth had an off day, Dublin had a really good day. Dublin didn't necessarily have a great day against Westmeath. Are Louth much worse than that Westmeath side? No, I think they'll be taking a lot of confidence into that into that knockout game, or not knockout game, but you know, you want to win that game. So yeah, look, I think I'd be fancying Louth now in that game against Dublin.
Yeah, do you think?
I think so. Like Paddy Andrews was speaking on the football pod over the weekend with Tommy Rooney, and he's pretty much saying, you know, Dublin have been getting by and just about getting by. So,
well, they hammered Louth. We thought they were back.
Yeah, that was the thing, yeah.
But he put that down more to lads having a good day rather than Dublin being back. And he said, like, the Dublin players can have a good day, and that's all well and good. But if you come up against a team that have a really good day and can go the full way with you,
yeah,
which Westmeath were able to do, then that's where Dublin fall up short.
Dublin are 2-point favourites for that game as things stand. That's obviously 2 weeks out. The games next weekend are on Saturday, 3 o'clock throw-in. Kerry Donegal, Cork Meath 5:30, Kildare Galway 7:30 on Sunday, the Rosies versus Tyrone. Roscommon are 6-5, Kildare 10-1 on. Sorry, Galway are 10-1 on to beat Kildare. 10-1.
That's very far, isn't it?
Whoa. Sure, look, we won't keep the ball kicked out to them. Yeah. 8 points.
You'll take that though. Look what happened with Westmeath at the weekend.
Yeah. They are writing them off.
Yeah.
What's next?
Next is Celtic. The aforementioned Celtic at the top of the show secured their Scottish Premier League title against Hearts at the weekend. A 3-1 win for Martin O'Neill's side. Callum Osman running the ball into the goal, an empty goal after the Hearts goalkeeper goes up for the header. I don't know if I've ever seen that before.
Kiftonville, exact same thing happened. They won the cup 2 years ago. I think it was Kiftonville Linfield. I think it was, okay. You know, similar type of narrative if you want to go searching for one.
Yeah.
In the IFA Cup final, and exactly the same thing happens. They're winning 1-0 and then the length of the pitch. Now, the only thing that was missing was him getting down and heading it in. Yeah. Come on, do it. Yeah. Oh!
It was too big a moment. To do so, I don't think you could risk it. It was funny though, because
you still have to take the chance, don't you?
Hearts actually
you're still going to win.
They're still going to win the game, yeah.
Hearts actually had a corner a few minutes before this, and Derek McInnes was caught on camera saying to his goalkeeper, "No, stay where you are, stay where you are." There's still time left. There wasn't time left really here. This was Hearts' last throw at the dice. And
are the goalkeepers not just clogging up the space for someone who knows what they're doing, who's good at football?
This is the point that
the
was
ball
made.
Always drops on them as well. Every time this happens, I find it's always directed at them. It's like, surely that's not the best option.
No, it's because they're just the biggest lad.
Yeah.
It never works out, really. Like, you have the... I know Allison scored that header a couple of years ago.
Now for everybody. It's the one in a million. It's like, that is the one in a million.
Yeah.
But I saw somebody make this point during the West Ham-Arsenal game. Like, what? The goalkeeper is actually smaller than quite a few of the centre-backs that West Ham have. So... why do you think you're going to be the one that we're giving the ball to?
Because they're mad, isn't it? It's on the brand.
Yeah. I was watching in Walsh's, and from where I was sitting, I could only, like, you know when you're sitting at the side of a TV, so it's kind of warped and you can't really see what's going on? I presume the keeper was still in the net. So I was waiting to see this ultimate showdown, 3v1. If he makes a save, it's an unbelievable moment. And it's it's an open net. Yeah. He just runs it in.
In true Scottish football fashion, though, it was mired with controversy this game.
Yeah.
You know, Ian Crocker made sure that everyone knew throughout this game that something big was going to happen. He kept mentioning it. He kept saying, even when Celtic were rewarded the stonewall penalty, absolute stonewall penalty for the handball, he said something along the lines of, you just knew something like this would happen. Did you know something like that was going to happen?
Yeah.
It wasn't as if Celtic were handed something outrageous here. It was a handball. That's how it works.
Don't be getting distracted by the commentator. It's one of the most remarkable titles of the 51 they've won. This is right up there.
Absolutely. 56, actually.
I knew you'd correct me.
They have overtaken Rangers now in terms of league titles. After the game, there was the pitch invasion, obviously, as well. A lot of controversy around that. People saying that the referee didn't blow the whistle, therefore the game was actually technically abandoned and Hearts would win 3-0.
Oh, yeah.
But the Scottish FA came out very quickly to say that referee Don Robertson did not abandon the game. The game ended. They said, given the speculation about the conclusion of the game, we would like to make it clear prior to the awarding of the trophy, we were informed by the match referee that the match had ended and had not been abandoned.
Would you want to win that way if you're a Hearts fan?
Oh, they'd take whatever they can get.
You think?
Yeah, they'd take it. Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, look.
Yeah.
Yeah. Two real winners of this game, though. I think Dyson Maida, who scored the second goal for Celtic, that was...
It's quite emotional after it, wasn't it? Yeah.
It was, yeah. And again, VAR intervening for absolutely no reason here. The VAR made the right decision. The linesman calling offside for that goal was outrageous.
That was bizarre.
He has scored 7 goals in the 5 post-split games. Just to put that into context, he had scored 3 goals in 20 games before that. So he was not in good form going into the split. But Martin O'Neill is obviously the real winner here. He has... a 75% win record now with Celtic and his 4th league title. And he was speaking on the pitch after the game. He was interviewed just before the trophy lift, and quite emotional was Martin O'Neill.
Never in my wildest dreams did I ever think that I could experience those lads up there in Oakley, and the atmosphere is just so the players, the coaching staff have given me a reason to live.
Wow. A reason to live.
It's amazing. I'm just thinking there, like, if Martin O'Neill takes over Celtic, would, you know, one less game to work with, they don't win that title. He came in at the perfect time. He's just a messiah, isn't he?
He is.
It's exactly what they needed.
If they kept with Nancy, providing that Martin O'Neill... and providing the results went the way that they did under Martin O'Neill twice, if they had not have hired Wilfred Nancy, Celtic would have won that league by 16 points.
In theory.
In theory.
When you run the simulation.
You got to give Wilfred Nancy credit where it's due.
Yeah.
He won 6 points throughout his 8 games in charge of Celtic, and those 6 points were absolutely crucial. You know, so does he get a title winner's medal? Might do. He was on Sky Sports before the game.
Wilfred Nancy was?
Two days before the game.
What's he doing now?
Just chilling out in France, I presume.
It looked like a nice background wherever he was.
Didn't look too bothered by his his record.
I think he was kind of put into a difficult situation where maybe he was not the best guy for the job, obviously. And he was given this job and obviously just wasn't up to it. I have some sympathy with him.
I have absolutely no sympathy for him. He will go down as the worst Celtic manager of all time.
Probably. Statistically, anyway.
There with John Barnes.
I'd say it's worse than John Barnes.
A few others that are in contention for that too. But anyway, again, always with the negatives. This is one of the greatest stories of all time.
It was fantastic.
Outrageous.
Sorry,
Martin O'Neill started the season with his chippy madness at Keith Andrews. And I was like, just shut up, will you? You're ruining this. And then all of a sudden he rescues it by the way it comes. So fair play to him.
I don't know, incredible story. I don't know if you'll ever get a situation again where the manager who goes on to win the league had previously said in the same season that the other team was going to win the league. He was on TalkSport like 2 weeks before he took the Celtic job to say Hearts are the favourites for the league now.
Well, it really helped him in the end, didn't it? Like it actually did. By talking them up, it makes it even better, you know?
It does.
The LMA should be giving him a special award for this as part of the Manager of the Year awards. Like, there should be a special achievement award for that.
Well, there's rumours that he may not be stepping into the sunshine just yet.
He should.
He was given no indication.
Champions League, no?
He was told he was given no indication of him getting the job post-season, and given Celtic's board's record of handing the managerial job to the manager in the showers after the game. If Martin O'Neill wasn't giving it after the game while he was taking a shower, then he may not be the Celtic manager next year.
All right. Next.
Next
They're
up.
They're in the green, obviously.
Celtic, obviously.
Hearts in the red. Rangers in the red.
Yeah. Well, just finally on Rangers, because people were saying this was the first time that it's a three horse race in Scotland. Scotland has been a one horse race for the last 14 years. Celtic have won 13 out of the last 14 titles. So, really, the favourites won.
In the end.
The next up is Tipperary, although we could mention a couple other counties in this. Clare, obviously, going into the green here.
Clare are sensational.
Yeah.
Tipperary in the red and Galway.
Galway in the red. Flaky, flaky Galway. We will talk about this again because we like Galway were flaky against Kildare and everybody's like, you know, that's what happens sometimes. You get sucked into stuff. But then at home against Dublin with the opportunity to have a statement victory and they couldn't do it. So we'll see exactly what happens now. Awfully incredible scenes from an Offaly perspective as well. And you just would fear a little bit about the quality of hurling that we're seeing in Munster, what's going to happen, the three teams who come out of Leinster. I was making the case after Galway beat Kilkenny and beat them so well that actually they'd be able to hold their own in an All-Ireland semi-final. Don't feel that way at the moment. Feels like they're regressing at the moment.
It does, and it just, the championship is so wide open now. Like we were speaking about the next round of the football championship. Like there's a lot of teams throughout the Munster and Leinster now that are, they're just either underperforming against sides that they should be beating, or they're not able to put, like Tipperary not being able to put a performance in against Clare when their place in the All Ireland series is at stake. And
yeah,
this was their fourth 10 or double digit loss in the last 4 years. So it's not against the grain that Tipperary can put in a performance like this. But you just think when there's so much on the line that this game was going to be tighter and Clare just stood all over them.
So as things stand, it's possible that Kilkenny might not go through. So in the table, right, Dublin are on top on 7 points. Galway have 6. Kilkenny are 3rd on 5. But Offaly have 4 points. Offaly play Kildare in their final game. And you would expect Offaly to win that game. If Dublin beat Kilkenny, Kilkenny will be out.
It's unthinkable, really, isn't it?
Yeah, it's
bad. Will the Dubs beat Kilkenny in the final game of the round robin? And they might need to. Do they need to? They will need to book their place if Galway beat Wexford in Wexford Park. But again, maybe Wexford beat Galway in Wexford Park. The difficulty is that Galway would go through still as the third place team, irrespective of what happens.
This is exactly what we wanted with the Leinster Hurling Championship for so long.
Yeah.
Like we gave out about it for so long, about it being a one horse race, but now we actually have a bit of a competition on our hands. It's great to see. Delighted for Offaly as well. They've had such an amazing story. So many players in there. I've had a tough time, obviously, over the last few years, but yeah, I'd love to see them get through to the All-Ireland. I'd love to see that.
Be a coming of age, really, for this team.
Yeah. Yeah, very young team as well. It's the under-20 crop finally coming through that we're maybe trying to push them through maybe a little bit too early. And relied on them a lot over the last couple of seasons, but they're starting to mature now, like Adam Screeny. What a player.
And the manner in which they've done it as well.
Yeah.
Nothing easy, but a great style. So, Tipperary in the red.
Tipperary in the red. Galway in the red.
Second season syndrome.
Clare in the green.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah. It's a phenomenal weekend of hurling. In amongst it all, because, I mean, there's so much going on for hurling. Definitely seemed like it was going to be probably further down the list this weekend with the provincials on and everything else going on in between. But I mean, the storylines have made sure that it has been bumped up to the top.
Yeah, we'll do much more on this as the week goes on. Don't worry. And obviously we're getting to a situation now where we're going to know what's going to happen, who's going to be left. It's fairly obvious he's going to be left in Munster, I think. But that situation in Leinster certainly deserves more attention. And also, I just think Clare, with the performance they put in, now their shooting was a bit erratic, but if they can fix that by 25%, and assuming none of the injuries are as bad as they have been in the past, I think they're all on in contenders again.
Could be. We'll run through some quick mentions and then one final mention before we finish up with the performance rankings. Real quick mention to Colin Buick, who goes into the green. Welcomed baby number 2 over the course of the week. And a lot of people in the comments asking where Colm has been. That's where Colm has been. So congratulations to Colm on that. He has a couple of weeks off now. Put his feet up. Maybe put his feet up. Maybe we'll be working harder than he's ever worked over the next couple of weeks. But nice timing ahead of the World Cup to have a couple of weeks off, isn't it?
Yeah, great summer, baby. And also in the green, Arthur James O'Dea and his new wife, Erica, who got married on Friday.
Yep. Absolutely. Looked like a good night. Real quick mentions to Jack Moylan. He scored a hat-trick on his Ireland debut, as mentioned, in the game against Grenada. Really interesting player. Immediately drops out of the squad, though, for the game against Qatar, which is...
And Tom Cannon.
Yeah. Seamus Coleman, worth a mention as well. He had his farewell from Everton this weekend. He hasn't made up his mind of whether he's going to continue at the club or not.
Hamer says he's made up his mind he's going to keep playing, which just won't be at Everton.
Okay, that's very interesting that he, if he decides to leave the club and go elsewhere. Easy, no-brainer signing for someone coming up to the Premier League, you'd imagine, for next year. Bit of experience. But he might want to drop down a further level to get more game time. That's probably the decision that Seamus Coleman has to make. Bruno Fernandes gets in a small mention.
Can't believe he didn't lead this.
He equaled the assist record over the course of the weekend, and he tried his hardest.
Yeah.
Because every time he got the ball, he tried to get an assist. But final mention in the performance rankings this week is the Irish women's national team, who had their first full match in the Aviva Stadium over the course of the weekend, and 31 and a bit, basically 31,800.
924. So. Massive crowd in comparison to, like we say, the first standalone fixture in the Aviva, but the first game they would have played there was in 2014, and it was a doubleheader with the men's Six Nations game against Italy that year. People will remember that. It was Brian O'Driscoll's final ever game, and, you know, the game for some reason was scheduled for after the men's game. A lot of people left, so there was around about 5,000 or 6,000 left in the stadium. So that fixture didn't do them justice, but you know, I was there as a fan at the weekend, and it was a special occasion for the players, but also the people there. And you know, there's this amazing screenshot going around at the weekend. I think it was Gorey put it up, maybe Gorey RFC, of Aoife Wafer at that game in 2014.
Ah, cool.
And there was a couple of comments underneath it, you know, speaking about it was her goal in 10 years to be there, and then that did the rounds ahead of the game. And you know, it's about the young girls and boys showing up to that game, seeing that this is possible for that team, and, you know, dreaming about playing for Ireland one day. So, yeah, special occasion. And they absolutely smashed Scotland as well.
We will come back to this in more detail a little bit later with Susanna as well, around about 9:15. We'll talk URC and Ireland being the third best team officially in Six Nations, which is kind of what they set out for at the start of the year. But that is your performance rankings today.